The disruption of a food supply. Where do calories come from, and how many are produced in our region? What are the easiest interventions our community can make to enhance our food security? This is all happening next Thursday evening at 7 p.m. at the Jamaica Plain Forum.
This Sunday at 11 a.m., the Community Church of Boston Speakers Forum presents George Lee, a youth worker and community organizer in Boston. He supports youth who are impacted by poverty, prisons, broken schools, and violence through his outreach work, leadership development, and campaigns to change policy and build community power. He will talk about how adults can support the struggles of young people to survive and organize. That's this Sunday at 11 a.m. at the Community Church of Boston in Copley Square. Visit communitychurchofboston.org for more information.
And this weekend, Bread and Puppet at Boston Arts Center, Truman Street, Bread and Puppet Theater, The Return of Ulysses at the Cyclorama. This respectfully truncated, rough hen of bold do-it-yourself adaptation of Claudio Monteverdi's opera was first developed this past June by Bread and Puppet. The piece includes two prologues, Modern Sky and Antique Sky. For Boston, The Return of Ulysses will be performed by Peter Schumann and the Bread and Puppet Company, along with a large number of local volunteer puppeteers and musicians. Informal talkback with the artist follows each performance. Sourdough rye bread will be served, and cheap art will be for sale after each performance. It's happening all weekend long, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night.
Can I have the last one?
Yes, you do.
Noam Chomsky speaks, along with Phyllis Bennis of IPS, on Thursday, February 10th. In Arlington, 75 Pleasant Street. There's a 5:30 p.m. reception. The main event starts at 6:30. Funds raised from this benefit event will be shared by Mass Global Action and the Majority Agenda Project. For more information, visit chomskyspeaks.org.
Oh boy, more Chomsky, huh? We didn't get enough of that on the show tonight.
Uh-huh. Well, if you want to see him in person. I want to mention one more thing. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, and MIT. And thank you, Chuck, for filling in for me tonight since I'm not here. Wait, I am here. What?
What the walk? What's going on? Anyway, human beings are up now, so they're in the house, and let's turn it over to them here on WMBR in Cambridge. Take it away, humans.
Welcome. Marhaban. I'm a Dr. Jalis Sakran. And I berate you with an inundation of welcoming. It is with gusto that I return from my traveling and bring along with me, hopefully, an ancient friend. Professor Levine, are you with us there?
Yes, I am with you all.
Excellent. Professor Levine, after an extended absence of many weeks, returns.
Yes, I've been meditating for many days. And I think as a result that the structure of my brain has been modified in some unusual manner.
That sounds very interesting, Professor Levine. Why don't we... I'm very excited to hear about this a little later. Let's bring the rest of our hosts on. We bring first Aurora. Aurora, vocal therapist. Welcome, Aurora.
Namaste. I am, as always, most days, here with you as myself, Aurora. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Well, indeed, thank you. Thank you for joining us. It is a wonderful joining that we are all enjoying. We also welcome Erno. Erno, marhaban.
Welcome to you too, Doctor.
The welcoming is mutual.
Yes.
Ours and yours.
A circle of welcoming.
Indeed.
Commences.
And we also welcome here with us Zorro in our now five-pointed circular circle.
Yes, welcome to you and welcome to all the listeners as well.
Excellent. And Professor Levine, are you still with us?
Indeed, I am.
Indeed, and in thought.
Professor, it is so good to have you back on the show and to hear from your voice the equilibrium that you have attained within, or perhaps maintained.
Well, as you all know, I've been on a very long quest this past year to find the source of my soul, because as you all know, and I'm sure all the listeners know, every human soul has a source in the divine root. As the Kabbalah teaches us, we are all part of the primordial man. We are all but limbs within this great universal being of humanity. And part of our life mission is to discover the root of our soul in this universal creature. And as a result, to figure out the purpose of our life as it relates to those other parts of that universal soul.
I'm very glad to hear you speak of this. For this topic has been on my mind this week, the topic of finding oneself and not allowing that self to melt into the others too much. And perhaps finding the source. Now, have you found any success with your quest?
Well, yes. I think I mentioned last time that I had descended into darkness, into sin, because I believed at the time that by descending into spiritual impurity, one could lift the sparks in that impurity into a higher realm. Mm. And I don't think I was successful in that approach, because I found that I fell into depravity very easily because I have a very base nature, as you likely know. And as a result, instead of being uplifted, I simply felt like a hedonistic, aimless creature.
Well, perhaps, Professor Levine, you must attempt to elevate yourself, to the purest forms in order to dive into that baseness and understand yourself at the roots.
Well, yes, I do. I do believe in the yin and the yang. I think there is no such thing as upliftingness or spiritual purity without the existence of something more base in reality. So I think to really appreciate the best of mankind, one also has to be aware of the worst of mankind. And I myself, during these past year, embodied the worst of mankind in many of my actions. I murdered various people, both spiritually and physically. And I've had to live with that guilt ever since.
That is quite striking to hear. I am interested to see what your plans are for the future.
Well, in the future, I would like to basically focus the rest of my life. I think I have about 5 years left to live. And I'd like to focus those 5 years on teaching others. And despite this past year's experience, I do think that I can have a positive influence on the course of other people's lives by teaching them to be reflective, to live life with mindfulness, to wake up every day and to think, what am I here for today? What am I going to get out of today? What am I going to give to other people? And yes.
I'm sorry if this question may be very personal, Professor, but I'm wondering, how do you know you only have 5 years left to live?
Well, I think most people don't know this kind of information, but as part of my journey into my soul's root, I actually was able to get some understanding of the delineation of my soul. There's this story told in the Talmud. It says that four sages entered the garden, the orchard, which is a metaphor for some deeper spiritual knowledge. One of them went insane. One of them became a heretic. And one of them went in peace and left in peace. And I think I fall somewhere in between. I briefly went mad and became a heretic. But as a result, I also was able to see the end of my soul's existence.
And it's important to understand that perhaps while murdering people is not good, that there is a net good that can be done by an individual in the world, and a net evil, and that sometimes, perhaps, it is important to allow yourself to feel the bad deeds and to understand their weight entirely, so that you may perform better, more wonderful deeds, and perhaps this is the positivity that can be taken from your experiences.
Well, like all things, positivity and negativity do not originate here, but they instead come from outside often. If you'd like to be the origin of such a thing, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Yes, hello. Earlier you mentioned the word depravity, I believe, was used.
Yes, depravity.
I noticed in the previous programming segment that someone mentioned somebody or something was perverse. I think it had to do with puppets or bread or something. What exactly is going on? Can you explain this further? Thank you very much.
The puppet and the bread. I'm not sure. Can any of our hosts speak to the bread puppet?
There are quite a few images in my mind right now which concern puppets, bread, and depravity, but I cannot speak of which is a real one and which has come from my dreams.
No, it is perhaps best to make sure that it is clear that many of us as hosts do not necessarily have the experience of the previous program.
Let's bring another caller in. Perhaps there is wisdom again, like happiness from outside. Caller, marhaban.
Yes, this is Francesco, the keeper of sounds. I wish you all vibrations, and I am there with you in spirit, maybe not physically.
Well, thank you for joining us.
I most enjoy this program, and lighted whenever I find it on my dial.
Well, thank you so much, caller. We are also delighted to be here with you.
It is a shared sensation of delight. I must go now and continue my work for this evening.
In spiritual contact with us.
I will always stay in spiritual contact as long as you guys continue to do what you do. But I am not really fully aware of, but I do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and namaste.
Will you come and stay with us?
Let's bring another voice in, another caller, another point in that circle. Caller, marhaban.
Yes, marhaban. Hello, I just wanted to welcome Professor Levine back. Really enjoy having you on. I listen weekly. I call in when it strikes me. But I recalled when you, right before you left on your little journey, you had earned the right of being called His Holiness. And I'm just curious if you still are to be called that.
Well, for me, the preferred term now is Your Tarnished Holiness.
Is that due to your murderous rampage that you went on?
Well, I wouldn't call it a rampage. It was more like a calculated decision, which I now regret. But I do, the lesson I learned from that is that no matter what sins we have committed, no matter how bad we have been, we should always hope to the future, and we should always accept that we can always better ourselves and stop murdering people, for example.
Absolutely.
That's usually the first step to spiritual recovery.
Well, I'm not sure how much this is really sarcasm, what you're talking, but there is a true message there that I'm really appreciating as somebody who definitely lived I wouldn't call it evil, but most of the harm I did was to myself in the past, but going on 4 years as a person in recovery, I'm definitely appreciative of stepping forward from the things that I used to do that were definitely not to be considered good by any means. So.
That is quite moving, caller, and I am glad that you seek enlightenment.
And may I join in the congratulations on your ability to rise above for the past 4 years?
I mean, what's really crazy about this is that often what we're rising above is not something from the outside, it's something from within.
Yeah.
It seems to be doing something bad to us. We're holding ourselves back, or we're not letting ourselves achieve our full potential.
Absolutely.
And caller, would you say that these, let's not call them evil moments in your life, but more disturbing moments, would you say that you would not be the person you are now without experiencing them? If they didn't...
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, I think it is important for us to remember that our lives are defined by our entire past and not simply that which we wish to remember.
Yes, we are made from not only the good, but the bad as well.
They're all pieces of the pie, I guess you'd say. And
quite a poetic way of stating it, yes.
But I wanted to say that, truly, I'm glad you're back, and I hope you're well, and I enjoy listening to all of you weekly. So I'll hang up and listen some more, and I appreciate all of you. Thank you.
Color, thank you so much for joining in and adding your color to the circle.
Yes, I really do appreciate those comments. I really hope to be back here on a regular basis as I untarnish the title of my holiness and hopefully regain the untarnished version of the title.
Yeah, and I really love the comment of the caller in the beginning, which is this the question of, is there sarcasm? Because that's a question that comes to me often. People always are asking, you know, Dr. Sakran, were you serious there? You know, is this really how you feel? And I think it's important to not be too serious, even about grave things.
Well, everything that we say can be taken, and it is heartfelt. The things that we are discussing And at the same time, it is important to be able to smile and laugh about everything in the world. And sometimes the topics that are most difficult for us to discuss, including our inner disturbances, our impurities, those are the topics that we cannot even begin to discuss with others unless we do it in a humorful or less serious fashion. Otherwise, it would be too weighty and terrifying to share.
Yes, this word terrifying, it is quite potent. I think it describes well the sort of existential terror, terrifying, in fact, which one feels to face head-on these frightening thoughts.
Yes, we must mix the sugar into the medicine, if you will.
I had an idea this past week, speaking of humor and whimsy. Mm-hmm. And this idea...
Yeah.
This idea was to embrace a marriage with myself, that in order to spiritually be happy with myself, that I must perform these vows, these marital vows, in sickness and in health, to stay with myself and not to allow myself to be divorced from who I truly am deep down inside. And this is a strange idea to people who usually make these vows to one another, and yet... If you cannot marry yourself, how can you expect someone else to marry you?
That is quite a fair point. I think that it is quite appropriate to have this symmetry and to have as much respect and love for yourself as it is for your partner.
Is it really possible to divorce oneself, I wonder? Aren't we always... forced to be married to ourselves?
Well, I am not sure of the legal capacity, but these laws are always changing, and I think that the spiritual existence of such a state is sort of a permanent possibility. It has always been, I think, possible to be divorced or married to oneself, regardless of the judicial rulings.
Well, from a spiritual point of view, it is surprisingly common that, well, perhaps not surprising, but it is very difficult for an individual to get in touch with who they truly are. And this speaks to Professor Levine's journey. Perhaps, Professor, you can speak more on this. It appears that Professor is introspecting.
Why don't we take a call while we discover the source of this? Caller, marhaban.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Tap is me! Hello?
Caller, marhaban. Please turn down your radio if you can.
Oh. Welcome on the air, caller.
Caller, are you still with us?
Perhaps we have lost her.
Let's try another caller then. Caller, marhaban.
Hi, sorry, I got disconnected there.
No, thank you for being persistent.
It's very nice.
You're welcome.
I think the caller got overly excited at the possibility of joining our vibrating circle.
Understandably so.
I have a question.
Yes, caller.
So, vibrating...
See, you have tapped into the wonderful giddiness of our circle at the moment.
She got excited again, yes.
And caller, I think we've lost the caller. It's really a lot of vibration. It's easy to fall off like a platform which is vibrating over... great.
Yes, too much resonance.
It is like one of those moments when you are caught up in a bubble of excitement and laughter, and you laugh so hard and so long that you forget the world around you, that you feel like you are in a rocking boat of ethereal space.
Ah, yes, and then you accidentally wet your pants. I have been there many times.
Fortunately, you know, the the vibrating circle, it lies over a pool, and really there is no danger from falling.
I did have an experience similar to this feeling of falling once, but it was even more disturbing. It was over the last few months during my journey, and I felt for a moment that a trap door had opened up beneath my feet, but as I fell through it, I was escaping from my own identity and personhood, and not only did I feel that the universe no longer existed, but I felt that I no longer was distinct from anything else. And I had this idea that as human beings, we are in a box, and this box is our identity, who we are. And occasionally, through certain types of meditations, one can open a trap door at the bottom of this box and fall out of one's identity. And that can be a very liberating experience.
You fall into the pool of collective consciousness.
Yes, I think that I have had similar experiences in my own meditations, and I quite agree. It is a very freeing and, in a sense, uplifting once one can get past the more terrifying pieces.
Mm. The sheer terror of it, yes.
Yes, when is falling never uplifting?
So we were recently sent an audio a message from one of our listeners, and you know, I think it's very relevant to what we're hearing. So why don't we take a moment here to listen? We'll all be here, but quietly.
After entering into the mountain that was wide open inside, we walked deeper into it. I realized that the inside was much larger than I thought. My friend and teacher accompanying me looked at me in a way that can only be described as a pre-existing knowingness of this fact. We walked in silence for miles, losing sense of where the inside edges of the mountains were. I lost sense of where we were and what we were. Then after hours had passed, we came to a small table with no chairs there. We sat, and two teacups and a tea kettle appeared before us. A message had suddenly formed out of light in midair. Drink not just the tea, but also your own thoughts as well. But choose wisely those thoughts you ingest, for they will affect you in ways you know not. The message vanished, and we were left with our thought and our choice. The choice of my teacher's actions later proved to be interesting. As we continued on our way, my teacher said, "Today, there will be no communication in the way we usually communicate. What can sometimes occur," he said, "is that information, no matter what its nature, can clutter and cause an imbalance, but divine information is meant to be shared. In the sharing, the balance occurs. Without sharing, clutter builds, and when clutter builds, choice becomes regulated by that which is less than conscious, clear, bright."
It was very lovely. that.
I especially enjoyed Aurora's beautiful voice, which I hadn't heard now in several months. And I have to say, during this time, it's interval, several times I lost my voice because I was able to have the vocal therapy that I'm so used to having through Aurora.
Thank you very much, Professor, and perhaps we can, on the ethereal plane, meet up once again.
That was a very uplifting message from Dr. Tama Kamai-Michel.
And a very important message.
Yes, it is certain to me that these journeys which we have internally, they mean very little if we are not able to communicate them with our friends and our family afterwards and share so that we may spread the enlightenment and not keep it only for ourselves.
It's very, very strange, this talk of collective consciousness and journey and sharing with others. It reminds me that earlier in this week, I heard of a story of a man who tried to trap himself inside of a balloon and cut himself off from the world. There's actually a video of the individual on YouTube showing this action, and I wonder, why would anyone want to do this if it is our goal to become a collective consciousness, to become one with each other and the world? Why would an individual want to do this?
Well, I can imagine that one thing is an attempt to experience that comfort and closeness that one experiences in the womb when you're enclosed within your mother, safe and warm and being fed by her, and not really having to worry about the world. And perhaps this is what he was trying to recreate.
But isn't that a selfish outlook on life?
And I think perhaps that the barrier which we attempt to put up, it is not real, and it perhaps enhances the dangerous and frightening consequences of when the whole world does affect us. You can imagine the startling moment you must have when you are born.
For isn't it the child's purpose to break free and explode from the womb into life? How does one go from this initial innate feeling of exploding into the world back into imploding into oneself?
Well, perhaps the most terrifying thought of all is that which, when cutting yourself from the world, if you manage to do it, you are left with only yourself as company, with only yourself as a mirror to one's insides, and how terrifyingly frightening that might be.
Let's bring another voice in.
Into our balloon.
Marhaban, caller.
Welcome.
100 years after his death, America continues to be challenged with issues of social justice and conservation.
Was that an automaton or a person?
Not sure. Strangely, we lost the connection.
Well, I did want to make a comment about this idea that one of our hosts said that the goal is to merge into the collective soul. But I'm not sure that's really our soul here. I mean, we are individuals for a reason. And I think part of our goal is to understand our role in a greater collective universe, but still understand that we have an individual role to fulfill.
Well, so this is one of the points which I believe it's important to maintain two views. One view is the idea of the individuality and allowing yourself to maintain that individuality so as not to become redundant or perhaps useless. And the other is to remember that that individuality is only a moment in space and time. When someone perceives you, you are an individual. But when zooming out and perceiving the mass of human history, that we are all so intimately entwined, we are all so identical to one another, in the real sense of identicality, that it's important to remember both views.
Yes, I think I can agree with this. There is something of a dualism which we may visit, which we may hold in our minds, and to say perhaps that we should attempt to sample both extremes to find, as we began the program, to speak of who one is, to find oneself, but at the same time to find humanity.
Can one really be an individual and part of a collective soul at the same time, though?
Well, I think the right analogy is to think of humankind as being a tree. We share a trunk and roots, but we are each individual branches that separate off from that trunk.
Well, I've always imagined us as being light, that we can be perceived as a single particle, a photon, but we are all a collective beam of glowing humanity.
Yeah, there is an... Well, I'm not sure if ancient is the right word, but there is an old dissection of the word, the English word, human. Of course, this is a very Anglo-centric view, but the dissection is healing, understanding, meaning, arboreal network. The idea is that we are all a tree, and by recognizing that we are a tree, we can reach... We can reach these desirable properties to heal, to understand, to mean.
And perhaps I think to maximize our collective potential as a race and to understand the universe the best that we all can.
Perhaps this man with the balloon is more like a seed falling off the tree, trying to become his own tree. Somewhere else in the forest, not realizing that should he plant his roots somewhere else, they will inevitably become entwined with the roots of the original tree.
This is a good point. It is something like the aspens. These trees which are connected, even though you cannot see from the top that they are the one object.
It's funny, this man inevitably failed. In the video, near the end, air came out of the balloon and the balloon ripped. And he was very distraught that he couldn't trap himself. Perhaps this was bound to happen all along. Maybe there is no chance for him.
It is interesting that you use this word trap. The idea perhaps that he is trying to surrender his freedom.
Well, perhaps from our point of view, he is trapped. From the point of view of those connected to the eternal collective consciousness. But from his point of view, he is not trapped, but safe and secure.
I believe from his point of view, the rest of us are trapped within that balloon.
Well, I think I might suggest that he had encountered some traumatic experiences at the hands of the universe or other human beings. And he may have interpreted those events as... He generalized them too much, and he thought the entire world was a dangerous place where he can be hurt. And he sought to protect himself from those dangers through this rubber balloon, this hot air, this helium, without realizing that the key to healing is not to separate oneself from others, but to recognize both the good and the bad in the rest of the universe.
The analogy fits. I just like to point out, I don't think it was hot air or helium. He was neither sweating nor suffocating.
I think that the great difference in the way that we can know whether or not we are trapped, whether we are ballooned and separated from the earth, is simply to strike the earth with our feet and to celebrate our lives with dance. It's a prayer that we send to the mother.
And perhaps we can, with our sounds and our resonances, help one another in a joyful dance.
Both with sound and with touch and smell. I think smell is important too. One can focus on these senses. Go outside, focus on the senses, and then realize how connected you are, because every single thing you experience, whether it's touch of dancing or the smell of your friend or the sound of the trees, that's all outside of you. And that's all your experience. All your experience is coming from the outside and connects you to everything else.
I believe this ties us back to our initial theme of connectiveness, because, and our other theme of good and evil experiences, because when you go outside, you see and you hear and you smell not only the beautiful colors, but also the dark colors, the music, but also the noise, and you also smell the flowers and the sulfur, and all of this forms who we are.
Yes, and one can have, and indeed I have, many friends whose odor is not necessarily uplifting, but I can still smell those friends and feel, wow, I am alive and I am connected to these people.
Especially after a long absence, the smell can be somewhat nostalgic.
And you would not really be Professor Levine without these pungent acquaintances.
That's right, and I think, although people think it's strange, I do, upon meeting a friend for the first time after several years or months apart, I will immediately just go right for the armpits, usually, and sniff a little.
Following the sageness of the noble dog.
Some consider me as quite strange as well, but I prefer to peruse the back of the neck.
I don't meet very many people who are willing to submit to an olfactory inspection, immediately on meeting.
Yes, I myself do not really partake in the smelling as much as I do the seeing and the hearing. Perhaps I am locking myself in a smell balloon. I never really thought about it that way.
It is interesting that you use this word submit. I think that it has kind of been an underlying theme to the show, perhaps, today. The idea of submitting oneself to an ideal or to a philosophy in order to fully understand.
And I believe it's important to perhaps remove or subdue one of your senses every once in a while in order to understand the importance and the sharpness of the rest of your senses, to truly feel or smell or hear without the assistance, the aid of seeing or hearing.
Yes, I think this is also part of our nighttime journey into the realm of the dream. It is something like the mind disconnect from exactly how it feels from the world and begins to examine, to introspect, if you will, upon the sort of sensations it might be able to know.
I love this image. If you have never tried it, it's worth it to see how much of your groundedness in existence and life comes from what you see. And an experiment to the person who is sufficiently motivated, sufficiently grounded already, is to cover one's eyes for an extended period of time, not for an hour, but for several hours, for an hour and 90 minutes, for some substantial time, to see how disoriented one can easily become, how easy it becomes to focus on the self and to ignore what is around you.
It is perhaps best not to drive when doing this.
Well, I do have one safer alternative which gets at the same idea, which I've tried many times, and that is to let your eyelids be heavy and let them fall mostly over your eyes, but still allow a little strip of your pupils to peek out. And that way you can walk around all day and see enough so that you're not falling over fire hydrants, but nevertheless not be inundated with the powerful visual stimuli that we're also used to.
I wonder if any of our listeners or any of my hosts have ever allowed themselves to be totally immersed in a dark chamber with the sound muffled. And I wonder if you've experienced how incredibly easy it is to withdraw within oneself and yet expand to fill the entirety of the universe.
Well, my understanding is that about an hour of full sensory deprivation will lead to temporary psychosis.
This is quite interesting. I have not undergone the experience personally speaking as of yet, but it is definitely something I quite intend to explore in the future.
Well, as always, we at Music for Humans would undergo psychosis without the sensory enhancement of your calls. So if you'd like to join in, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
I was in high school a little while ago, and I was locked into a locker for a while. And I screamed and screamed, but no one was in the gym anymore because my friends in class already got out. And I was left there overnight in the dark in a locker. I couldn't even sit down. And when I woke up the next day, I chewed through my hand to the bone. And I had to go to the hospital.
I am interested in how you finally accomplished your escape from this horrible, horrible situation. I'm very, very sorry, of course, to hear.
That was pretty cool. Scar. It looks like a bracelet.
Well, caller, this is obviously a very cruel experience and a traumatic one.
It's all good fun, and I'm sure if I hung out with the guys who did it now, you know, and all these things, you know, we'd have to laugh about it, and, you know.
I don't think so. But perhaps the other hosts have had similar experiences with this sort of hazing, because...
Well, I have not chewed through my hand to the bone, perhaps another one, but I have not this experience, I am sorry.
Well, Color, I can tell from your voice that you are still influenced by this memory, and perhaps it is important to allow yourself, as you seem to have not, to feel...
No, I'm over it!
To feel...
I'm very much over it, I want the therapy! 12 years!
Pain. To feel it. To allow yourself to understand the depths to which you were led. Because your voice is a higher pitch than it ought to be, and that is an indicator of stress and of attempting to fit oneself into a differently sized vessel.
Oh my God, I think I'm cured. Thank you.
That is quite moving.
I must go off.
Okay, that was weird.
Very strange. When I myself was in high school, I was in a situation where we tried an experiment to put someone in sensory deprivation inside of a locker. He didn't seem to mind nearly as much.
Was this person a volunteer?
No, I think there are several questions here. First of all, Erno, how large was the chamber, and who else did you lock in there with him or her?
Well, it was a sensory deprivation experiment, so he was the only one locked in there. And Aurora, to answer your question, yes, he was a volunteer. He liked to volunteer many, many times for many different reasons. He, in fact, would give us money to buy extra lunch every day. Usually.
That is quite interesting. I have another question, which is, which month was it?
It was a long time ago, Zorro, but December?
Yes, this is quite a good month for some kind of sensory deprivation.
There are those who say that in the moment of carnal passion, if one descends with one's partner into sensory deprivation, lights off, no sense of smell or touch, then one soul can be united with the lover in bliss.
Well, Professor Levine, Perhaps the objection is obvious, but how does one enter a state? I mean, I assume one must be alone to enter a state of sensory deprivation.
Well, not really. If the motion is not there, if there's no movement between the lovers, then there will be no tactile sensation other than the constant pressure of the body.
But isn't that a sense?
I think that we should defer to Professor Levine's carnal expertise in this matter.
Yes, I mean, one has to have earplugs and nose plugs and so on, and blindfolds and various various devices to restrain oneself and the partner during this time, but it can really be a moment of pure bliss.
Yes, it sounds very, very erotic.
Now, to those of you who do not have access to a total immersion water darkness chamber, there are other methods to achieve somewhat approximation of these feelings.
Well, and to, again, to cast away any danger of we ourselves experiencing sudden deprivation, let's bring in a caller now. 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello. I was listening to your show and just very enthusiastic reception here because I feel we have we're kindred spirits to some extent. That we were just discussing plunging into a sensory deprivation tank, I'd assume, because that's I feel I've been through this. Built a tank a few years ago with the mass of the liquid, the cornstarch mixer kind of matched the density of the human body, and I heated that up to the average skin temperature, and it was all done in my basement.
Wow, so extremely thorough work there, Connor.
Yeah, it took 9 months of my life, but it was when I was done, I had a sensory deprivation tank, and when I entered, I went through a process where I came to the conclusion that I should marry myself. And that just brought me, that's where I thought you were initially going with the conversation earlier.
Mm. Yeah, this is very much in line with where we started our discussion about self-marriage and self-divorce.
I want to issue a warning, though, because now I've been through this experience. And when I came out of my basement, I couldn't see very well. And I had, it's gone away now, but I had almost a fur on the palms of my hands.
Wow, so a stunning change, really, in something which one would consider quite basic.
Well, and this makes sense if you consider a vitamin deficiency, perhaps vitamin D from lack of exposure to sunlight. And vitamin D is one of those things that really regulates your hormones and your natural cycles. So this could cause hirsutism.
One even greater fear in this situation is that one can forget that one exists. If you're held too long in the sensory deprivation chamber, you will sometimes forget that you are a being that exists in the universe.
Perhaps condense into a ball of existence within yourself.
Or perhaps a cube.
I am confused. If this was indeed a sensory deprivation chamber, caller, I wonder, how did you find your way out?
Well, you had to lie in it. And once I'd pulled the lid over myself, I realized that I hadn't really set up a plan. I was so excited when I had finally completed this. So I guess that's another warning, would be to communicate with others that before you do something like this, tell them about your plan.
Well,
because I was trapped in there for a little while. Eventually it dried out to a... It was kind of hard at first, but then it dried so far that it became brittle, and I was able to break free.
Well, unfortunately, Connor, I think we're getting very close to the end of our time. It's frightening me.
Well, thank you for sharing your experience.
Yes, well, just two warnings out there. Watch out for the palms of your hands.
Yes, I would
and
like...
tell somebody else, yeah.
I would like to mention that although sensory deprivation in the extreme may be dangerous, there is a mild alternative, which is simply meditation. And there was an article out in the New York Times today about meditation and the effects it can have on the human brain. Even after just 2 months of half an hour a day of mindfulness meditation, the MRIs showed that the brain centers of people who had meditated that dealt with empathy and reception to experience were greatly enhanced, and those involved with fear and stress were greatly disactivated.
And it's really a testament to the power of just turning it all off.
Exactly, turning off and focusing on a single thing inside of one's mind.
It's such a profound image, and I think a great power to people who, if ones were to suddenly lose a sense after being accustomed to this sort of exercise, it's really a powerful thing. That the loss would not be as tragic.
And perhaps wordplay is best for those who are not yet accustomed to meditating in a more sensory deprivating manner.
Well, I can just say this meditation technique is extremely simple. One simply picks a sound, mantra, focuses on it, sits half an hour, and that's all there is to it, really.
That's all very mysterious, Professor Levine. I'm hoping we could hear more about that later. Perhaps in the coming weeks.
I would enjoy that very much.
Well, thanks to our many callers, and apologies to the many callers that tried to reach us and were unable to join because we didn't have time, and there is only so much time. And thanks very much to Professor Levine for joining us this evening.
Oh, it was my deep and wide pleasure to be with you again.
Thanks also to Erno.
I am never sure. I'm still not sure if I want to break my balloon or stay in it, but thank you for having me.
Thank you, Erno, and thanks also to Zorro.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you to all the listeners, of course.
And thanks to Aurora.
As always, coexistence is a delight. Namaste.
I'm Editor Jalsa Sakran here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio, with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned next for Radio Ninja after several minutes. Thank you.
Four points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
He came from outer space to save the human race. A creature with a dream. To entertain the children of the night. The rest, as they say, became history.
Magogo. The Show Show. Saturdays, 8 p.m. WMBR, 88.1 FM, Cambridge.
Hello out there, Cambridge. This is L Train, coming to you with another episode of Radio Ninja, your favorite radio show on WMBR Cambridge. I call my show Radio Ninja because I have a warm, fuzzy feeling for the Ninja Tune label. And if you do too, you're really going to enjoy this. But first, today I'm starting with the XL label. Ratatat, their 2010 release, is here in my hand. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy. The phone number here is 617-253-8810. That'll get you to me. Also, I'm on the AOL Instant Messenger. Hit me up. LTrain is my name, all one word. No funny stuff.